CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CGM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. This first segment, folks, is a post-dated one. Some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Maria Sherzhovsky will be telling us a little bit about AMCSI. So, can you tell me a bit about AMCSI?
Sure. The organization is a nonprofit. It has been around for about 17 years. It was started by a mom who gave birth to a baby girl named Abby, who has AMC, arthrogryposis multiplex congenita, and didn't really find a support group or any kind of support for that matter. And so she decided that as she encountered other people with this condition, that there was a need for a support group. And that eventually evolved into a formalized structure, a nonprofit. And it's now going on 17 years. And the organization provides, we do everything virtually because our members are all over the U.S. and some are overseas. We have some in Canada. We engage in research that involves Spain, France, Amsterdam, Canada. But most of our members of the organization are throughout the U.S. It is a condition that occurs one in every 3,000 births. So you can imagine that it's pretty scattered across the country. And so we take pride in creating a sense of community with services, programs, conference, support, and scholarships that will help them with a variety of needs in their everyday life.
So how does AMC typically affect a person?
So AMC, it falls on the medical side of things, it falls under the rare disease category. But it really is more a condition than a disease. A disease is something that evolves over time. AMC does not. It is developed in the womb for various reasons. It can be genetic. It can be based on a mom who has a very small frame, not having enough amniotic fluid, the baby's not moving enough. And like I said, it's simply genetic. So the way it presents itself is a contracture of a joint. Typically comes in pairs. So it will be the wrists, the upper limbs, the legs, or portions of it. It could be the ankles, could be the hips, could be the knees, could be the entire leg. There's about 300 to 400 categories of how AMC can present itself. One that most people are used to hearing is club foot. And that's when a baby is born with the foot that is inverted, mostly inside. It could be downwards, it could be to the other side. And it can be addressed to some extent when they're little because there's still some mobility in those joints. And most of the babies will be casted and eventually can go on braces to be able to straighten those limbs. But not everybody will qualify for that. It really depends on how the condition presents itself. Is the soft tissue around that joint there? Is it a matter of unlocking the joint, or do they not have the soft tissue? Is there a muscle mass that come with it, or do they not have muscle mass that will help move that limb? And so it presents in different ways. Some of them will have it on the upper torso, which seems to be the minority. The vast majority are going to be on the wrists or mostly the limbs. So for anybody who comes to the conference, they'll see the little ones walking around because they don't know any difference. So they're walking around, they're running, they're speeding on their wheelchairs, being kids, but with some mobility challenges as a result of how they were born. And or if the surgeries, they didn't have access to the surgeries, or if the surgeries didn't quite work. There's a window of time by when they can do that. By the time they get to teenage years, it's not a whole lot they can do because the bones are pretty much set in place. And there also aren't that many surgeons and experts in this field. There's 5 to 8 across the entire U.S. and Canada. So people do come from all over the world to seek this kind of treatment. And it can be quite expensive as well. So we're grateful for our partners, that our members and donors who allow us to provide scholarships so we can help sponsor some of the costs, whether it is a conversion of a vehicle, an adoption, college scholarship, medical treatment, medical travel. And so, to your point, it can come in different ways. And so we have diversified the level of support and how we meet the need and how we answer the call for need based on the fact that everybody's situations may be a little different.
So in your time providing support to those affected with AMC, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
We have a lot of success stories, but I think that success in this case probably carries a different definition than what you would typically think of. You know, a success for us would be helping a family who needs to travel to another state to pursue a treatment, and they can't travel because they don't have the means or they don't have the accommodations to make that trip. So we will step in to help with that, and then many of them will go to Shriners Hospital that offers all of these treatments at no cost. There's other institutes that are private where they can get clinics and get help. So for us, success is the access to the resources and the financial means they need to be able to pursue whatever it is that they will need in the next phase of their treatment and their lives. If they're looking for scholarships for college, if they have a medical need, a travel need, if they have a hardship. For some families, they have to choose between pursuing a treatment and paying their mortgage. And so if they can't make ends meet, if they can't pay the bills, we do have a hardship grant that will help with that too. There's a sense of isolation that comes with it if they're not able to travel or if they're not mobile enough to engage in everyday activities. And so our conference that brings together anywhere between 400 and 800 people who are either AMCers or the families of those who are affected by this condition, this creates a sense of normalcy. That for us is a success. Many of them will say, it wasn't until that conference that I saw somebody just like me. And so it gave me confidence. It inspired me. I realized in talking with them that I can pursue and have a full life. I can pursue my dreams. I can attend college. I can be a professional. So each one of those is a success for us. It's just a matter of how we choose to phrase it. And we have successes like those every single day, every single year.
So how do you go about reaching out to the affected community?
That's a great question. It's an evolution. It is a work in progress. But by and large, it's word of mouth. There's a sense of affinity and camaraderie, sisterhood, brotherhood with everybody who's affected, because we all want to feel identified or be able to identify with someone else. We want to be able to feel understood, be amongst our peers. And many of the activities that we have, which whether it is an in-person workshop or a meetup or this conference, provides that opportunity. And so part of the growth has been organic, with people realizing, I have another friend that has that. Or we saw you guys at an event at the Shriners Hospital in Greenville, which the founder and I attended in March. And from that point forward, now they're connected to the organization as a sponsor, as a donor, as a member, as a family in need. And so we take every one of those opportunities to create that awareness and build that sense of community everywhere that we go.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Shelley Andrews from Avalon Employment will be telling us about her advocacy efforts. So, can you tell me a little bit about your advocacy efforts?
Well, I've been employed with Avalon Employment as an employment counselor for almost 20 years in Newfoundland and Labrador. So I've always been advocating for employment on behalf of the individuals that we service here. So that is my biggest advocacy piece, the opportunity for individuals to be able to work.
So in that sense, for an individual with a disability, what are some of the most common barriers encountered to employment?
I guess it's some of the myths that employers have sometimes. You know, are they able to do the job? What kind of liability do they bring to the workplace? So trying to dispel some of those myths, as well as some urban, some rural challenges, maybe transit system, or the loss of services through provincial governments in their areas, you know, sometimes drug cards. So people are a little nervous when, you know, they're seeking employment as a person with a disability. But we try to dispel, that's part of our advocacy as well, to go out to employers to recognize the value that they bring, the skills that they have, and showing that they should be working in your business and what they can contribute to your bottom line.
So do you find that the corporate world and businesses are typically receptive to the idea once you explain how it's in their own interest?
Absolutely. You're seeing a changing landscape. You're seeing that they are individuals with disability is an untapped workforce. And so corporations are recognizing that they have gaps within their organizations. And, you know, individuals with disabilities still have skills. They still have abilities. They still have, you know, things to contribute. They just, in a lot of cases, just need to be given that opportunity like anyone else and to be able to showcase what they are able to do and what they can bring into a workplace.
So, do you have any advice for a job seeker with a disability who might be starting out and wondering, am I really capable of getting involved in the working world? Is there really something for me?
Well, of course, not every individual out there in the disability world is attached to a service provider like we are. We are a service provider. So sometimes, being connected to a service provider can bring some other opportunities that trying to do it on your own is probably a little bit more challenging sometimes. So we as counselors that can do that little bit of HR and that little selling the individual, that sometimes not everyone is able to sell themselves and able to showcase what they can do. So for us, the service providers, we provide that little bit of, HR that other big corporate world may not have the time to use, and so that we can, help them present that individual and their opportunities can be showcased. So we really, really, I think, as someone that is, presents with a disability and if they have the opportunity to connect sometimes with a service provider, that enables them to probably may have an opportunity to get their foot in the door a little bit more a little differently sometimes than trying to do it on their own. So, you know, and we try to use a little bit of our expertise, and we hope that, you know, we have shown that we can get some results a little differently. And so that is one piece of advice. You know, try to find a service provider in your area that can advocate on your behalf.
So in your time with Avalon and providing support for workers with disabilities, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
There's many success stories, actually. You know, the individual that gets the very first job, the individual that calls up and says, I can go into a restaurant and I can order what I want. I don't need to depend on my mom or my dad. Or the individual that buys their first vehicle or their first apartment. Those are the stories that stick with me, and there's not one particular, because there's been so many success stories of that magnitude. And for, you know, we all remember sometimes our very first job, and I guess, and then the ability after they get their first job, because some individuals will recognize that that particular job is not for him or her or for them, and they feel that confidence of saying, okay, I can apply for something else. I can go in. I've proven myself. And so recognizing all those stories brings a lot of joy, and recognizing that some individuals have overcome a lot of hurdles to get that first job. So, those moments are very special for sure.
So, our mutual friend, Sean Wiltshire, told me a little bit about a recent conference you attended, an opportunity to speak to some of the truths surrounding disability inclusion. Tell me a little about that.
Yes, so we recently, Canada recently hosted the second World Conference in Vancouver, BC, and it was hosted by there was four hosts, the Canadian Association of Support Employment, Inclusion BC, the World Association for Support Employment, and the BC Employment Network. And over 600 delegates attended the conference this past June. And it was an opportunity to showcase opportunities that are happening throughout the world and what countries are doing differently, what countries are doing alike. It was able to see self-advocates be there. It was just a wonderful opportunity to all come together. The last one was held in Ireland pre-COVID. And this was the first conference post-COVID, a world conference. So, you know, it's been a few years in the making. So it was wonderful. The weather was excellent. It was an opportunity to collaborate, to network with all like-minded individuals that the main purpose for a lot of our folks there is to advocate on behalf of individuals with disabilities. And also, you know, we're all a bunch of service providers as well. So it's a network there that we can all get together and even know what we're doing in the different territories, the different provinces. So it was a really, really great opportunity to just for fellowship and collaboration and networking.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
So you're hanging with your inner circle. Maybe you're making cocktails. Maybe you're packing bowls. Even while we're distancing, it's important to remember, alcohol and cannabis each mess with your driving skills. Be cool. Make sure you and your friends get home safe. Take a cab if you need to. A few bucks could save a life. And we can do it again next weekend. A message from Arrive Alive, Drive Sober.
Welcome back. to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Maria Sherzhovsky told us a little bit about AMCSI, and Shelley Andrews told us a little bit about her work with Avalon Employment. In this segment of our show, Emily Oliver will be telling us about canine companions. So what can you tell me about canine companions?
Absolutely. So we are a national nonprofit. We span six regions across the country, and we serve people in every single state in the country. So the clients that we serve are adults, children, and veterans with disabilities, and we also work with professionals working in a variety of settings, from healthcare to education and law enforcement. Canine companions, so those six regional training centers. I am actually speaking to you from the North Central Training Center. That's based out of New Albany, Ohio. And this North Central region covers 14 states. So that's spanning from the Dakotas to Western Pennsylvania.
So when you mentioned veterans, I'd imagine that having an animal companion, specifically a dog in this case, of course, would tend to ease things like traumatic stress and what have you.
Absolutely. So we have always served veterans as part of our clientele, right? So our dogs are trained to complete tasks that assist people with physical disabilities, hearing loss, and then most recently veterans who experience PTSD. And those dogs specifically who work with veterans who are experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder are trained to assist with a variety of things on top of those 45 tasks, right? They can also help with nightmare interruption, providing that barrier between the veteran and someone. Kind of even just helping provide that nudge of comfort and awareness to let a veteran know when they're about to experience, maybe their anxiety is rising. It helps bring them back, helps that person get a little more focused and centered. We actually had one of our veteran graduates speak at an event on campus in front of roughly 200 people recently, and he told me that prior to receiving his service dog, that's something he would not have necessarily felt comfortable doing, but having that support, having that dog by his side helped enhance his ability to, and his confidence to be able to get up in front of that large crowd and speak.
So how do you reach out to those who might benefit from having a service dog?
So there's a variety of different ways that people can grow in contact with us. A lot of that involves public awareness, like what we're doing right here, right? Raising the awareness, reaching out to news stations, and just spreading the message of who we are and how we help people. Most recently, we helped participate to pass the PAWS Act, right? So that allows, it's a five-year pilot program, essentially, that allows the VA to provide those resources to veterans, let them know that we are here. We do provide our dogs completely free of charge. So just, you know, getting the word out there, letting people know, and then we do have that application process. People can go to canine.org to learn more if they want to apply for a dog. We also have a test that allows them to kind of see, is a service dog right for you? And then go from there. We'll obviously connect them with our applicant services department so that we have people who can actually have those phone calls and start those conversations with them.
So to assist with things like documentation, stating that this person is legally entitled to have a service dog with them.
Mm-hmm. So we do, yes, we do provide that documentation. So and that's a part of that application process, right, where we would get that referral per se from that healthcare provider and just, you know, touch base, have the phone interview, have our client come to campus so we can learn more about them and specifically what they're looking for. It might be someone who might be looking for assistance picking up, maybe they drop items on a frequent basis, right? Having that dog to help pick up that item or open that door for them to ease the burden of having to navigate doing those things.
So, in your time with Canine Companions, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
There are a ton. That's a great question. I think most recently we held our largest fundraising gala of the year at our North Central campus. We had a huge turnout for that, and we exceeded our fundraising goal of over $22,000, right? So we raised more than $222,000. But what really made us successful that night was the turnout. We had several graduate speakers who came out and shared their personal stories. Being able to share that with the public makes a huge difference. So, like hearing from that gentleman who explained that he now feels comfortable speaking in front of large audiences, he has a better relationship with his son than he ever has before because he feels more connected to his family now, like he can be there for them. We had a gentleman who is an attorney who said that he was diagnosed with MS when he was going through law school. And at the time, he was the only person he knew his age who was experiencing an MS diagnosis. So that was very isolating for him to have to go through that. And, you know, when he decided to apply for a service dog, he said that it was, going through the team training process with us was the first time that he had ever felt like he was visiting a campus that was inclusive and that was built for someone with his disability. Being there to form those bonds, those friendships, meeting other people similar to his age who were also experiencing disability, a wide range of, factors that he had gone through his life experiencing, like wondering, how am I going to open this door? I dropped my keys again. How am I going to pick them up, right? Things that we might take for granted every day are things that he had to factor into every single one of his decisions. And so for him to come to our campus and meet other people who are going through the same experiences as him were, it was just very huge for him to be able to come and experience that. It's great to hear those stories.
So that's the thing, though. Once the door has been opened and you realize you're not the only one going through it, the world doesn't seem like such a small place. It doesn't come across as you against society. I mean, see it more as a community.
There's that camaraderie, there's that companionship. And just to speak to that a little bit, so our team training process during this time period, at each regional training center, we have the capacity to be able to host people on our campus. We have people potentially traveling to our training center in Ohio from South Dakota. They're already taking time off work to do this. We want to be able to ease their burden as much as possible. So during that 2-week process where they're learning to work with their dog, they do stay with us free of charge on our campus. It makes it easy, especially during inclement weather. They're not having to travel a long distance. They are here and ready to go. We provide those lunches free of charge, and we provide that sense of companionship and camaraderie. For them to be staying and living with us, it is an experience where these students can form a bond, not only with their dog, but with their peers, and be able to work together as a team. And we do have a lot of students who will follow up with us and say that they're in a group chat now with their fellow classmates, that they talk on a regular basis. We do provide that sense of canine companions community and that family kind of sense that goes home with them.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
My friends, I'm very pleased that Shelley was able to take the time to do an interview. The fact is, international conferences bring together the best and the brightest from around the world. And individuals with disabilities are not a segment of the population confined to any one specific area. Truth is, it's happening in one place, it's happening in many others. Fact is, we're lucky here in Canada. We have a lot of progressive programs and a lot of supports in place. But it's by coming together with different countries we can learn what they're doing right, what we're doing right, and how each one of us can make progress going forward. The fact of the matter is, the disability community is a world community, and it is stronger as such. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.